Hi, I'm Message Mon. I'd like to share a story, a true story, one that no one has heard until now. This is a story about O.J. Simpson, but not just O.J. Simpson. It's about O.J.'s balls. Yes, I said it, his balls, his big black salty balls, the one that dangle between his legs and he plays with when he's alone. Well, actually, not always, and that's what this story is about, how O.J.'s balls changed my life. They changed my life in a dramatic way. They gave me purpose. They gave me direction to work on in my life. They gave me a reason to continue to be Message Mon. O.J.'s balls, his nuts, that's right. His balls, I didn't even have to see them. Someone else saw them and they changed my life. This is a wild story, folks. It's almost magical because before his balls materialized, I was on top of a pyramid-shaped mountain, clicking bracelets together at 3 a.m. on a full moon. I did it 10 times. Okay, that's what this is all about. The ritual on the mountain and the magical balls that manifested and changed my life and gave me purpose. O.J.'s balls changed my life. You're probably wondering what O.J.'s balls in a mountain ritual have to do with each other. I'm getting to that. You just have to know a little bit of the character before you can understand the magic that's about to take place. It's going to be taking place soon in this podcast because I really don't have a bunch of time to sit and talk to a telephone. But I want to get this story out. So anyhow, let me explain these bracelets. Now, you know, it took years for me to get to that mountaintop, and there were things going on in my life on the ground, you know, before I got up to the mountaintop, and the bracelets were one of them. I was at an African street fair in Santa Ana, and I saw this bracelet. It was, kind of big, a gaudy bracelet, but I bought it. I don't know why I bought it, because I didn't like it. I didn't wear it after I got it home. So about a year later, I was at this woman's house, and on her coffee table was a bracelet sitting there. And I picked it up, I looked at it, I go, oh, this is interesting. She goes, oh, you can have it, I don't wear it. So when I got it back home, I discovered they were the same bracelet. And there's pictures of these bracelets on my website, messagemon.com. And so I had to click them together when I got on top of that mountain. It just seemed like the thing to do. Isn't that what people do on mountaintops? Click bracelets together. Anyhow, I had a couple of cool bracelets, and I was going to the mountaintop, and I finally made it up there on June 1st, 1996. This was before I had anything to do with O.J.'s balls or Nicole Brown or her family. So, on this mountaintop, it's a pyramid-shaped mountain. It's a full moon. You know, I had to drive 15 miles down a dirt road, which happened to be called the Holy Gem Trail. How strange is that if you're trying to get on a path and it's named after you? Anyhow, I would go up and down that mountain. I start collecting mountain dust, and I started to build a shrine right after that because of the fact I needed a place to put the mountain dust. The shrine is on my website too, and it's a very strange, magical thing that I started to create after going up on the mountaintop. And it was funny because like a few years after I'd gotten into the shrine, building it, I happened to tell my mom I was building a shrine. And she's the one that told me that people who have spiritual experiences on mountaintops build shrines. And actually, she said men who have spiritual experiences on mountaintops. I try to correct that and make it, you know, gender-friendly people, but I don't know of any women that have been up on a mountaintop clicking bracelets together and come down to do anything about it. So I'm going to leave it at men on mountaintops build shrines after spiritual experiences. And that's what my shrine is. I had no clue what I was building. And for the first 6 months, I was going up and down the mountain, taking mountain dust up and down the mountain with me and praying for purpose and healing. My back was killing me and I needed to heal that. I was going to a chiropractor every 2 weeks or something like that. But after the trip up the mountain, the first trip up the mountain, I never went to a chiropractor again. So the instant healing took place on my back and the ritual began. The ritual has lasted over 20 years because I still practice it. And we're going to get to what that ritual has turned into later on in this broadcast. But right now, I think you understand enough for me to get to the part about OJ's balls. Before I get to the balls, I have to tell you about the band, because bands and balls go together. That's what we do, play music and sling balls. But anyway, I'm the eldest member of a family band called Jay Harris Band, also known as Sibling Rivalry. I have four very talented siblings that played together when we were young. And, things happened growing up and the band broke up. So my little brother put together another band called Slapback, my little brother Jarrah. And he put together Slapback and put the whole family in Slapback except for me. So all my siblings are playing in Slapback and I'm just playing with myself or whoever I can find. And Slapback gets signed, to Warner Brothers and they get a record deal and do a video. Check it out, True Confessions. And I'm not in Slapback, so Slapback's very Slapback's very popular, and they're rolling, they're moving on up. So one day, while I'm doing my own thing down in Dana Point, playing at Michael's Supper Club with my own band, Andre Morton, Princess, and Daryl Frias, someone runs in the club and they go, OJ's down the street, OJ's down the street. And I go like, so what? You better hide your girlfriend, especially if she's blonde and white. You know, everyone laughed. It was a joke. I had to tell a joke from the stage, you know. I wasn't expecting anyone to run in my club and go, OJ's down the street. Anyhow, I wasn't expecting what came next. The next morning, I was living at my parents' house. And yes, I was 40. So what? I was living at my parents' house. And I met my mom in the kitchen one morning. I go, hey, mom. The next morning, I go, hey, mom, guess who was in the harbor last night? This is exactly how I found out. My mom goes, your dad knows. I go, what? How does dad know? Mom goes, because he called the house. I go, what? He called the house? Why did OJ call the house? And this is how I found out that my siblings were keeping secrets from me. And his mom says, oh, they were down there meeting with the kids about doing a video to one of Jarrah's songs. I go, what? She goes, yes. I go, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I mean, that could be bad for everybody, for you and dad and the whole family if you did something like that. Nobody wants to see OJ in a video talking about I'm a free man, sucker. So, when I see my sister, we were recording a song called Heart and Soul, and she's in the studio, in the sound booth. I'm behind the control booth, and so I go, Julie, pushing a button. So what was OJ like? She goes, you promised not to tell anybody. I go, yeah, I promise. And that's when she proceeded to tell me that OJ Simpson came to that meeting, he got drunk, he started hitting on her girlfriends that she had called down I guess they created somewhat of a circus, because when the band met with OJ, Julie started calling her, she called like three of her girlfriends, and Janine called some. That's how I found out about it, because it created such a scene down the street. Somebody ran to my club and told me. And so she says he came to that meeting, he got drunk, he started hitting on my girlfriends, and after the meeting, he asked us if we wanted to go to a hotel and have sex with him. And the girls go, no, we don't want to go to a hotel and have an orgy with you. He goes, well, I got this, or he offered him an 8-ball of cocaine. I don't know if he held it up or what, but he says, I got some cocaine. And the girls go, no, we don't do any cocaine. And that's when he said, well, I got this to go with it. And he pulled his balls out right on the front porch, right on the front step of Harpoon Henry's in Dana Point, right there in public. And Sis told me this in the studio and made me promise not to tell anyone. Well, I knew where the Brown Foundation was. I'd seen Denise a couple times. I wanted to get involved with that foundation. And I figured that I conjured those balls up. The reason that OJ came into my family's life is because I was up on top of a mountaintop clicking bracelets together. And after OJ's balls came out, everything changed. Hello, and if you're still listening, thank you for hanging around. Now, Sis wanted me to keep that little story a secret. O.J. Simpson had just showed her his penis, and she didn't want to tell anybody, and she didn't want me to tell anyone. Now, who does that? If a guy like O.J. just gets out of jail after being accused of murder and being acquitted for murder, and that everyone thought that he did, why would he pull his balls out, number one, down the street from Nicole's house? And number two, why would you keep that a secret? That's a crime. I mean, she should have called the police on him right then, but, you know, I don't get it. But anyhow, keeping that a secret was not an option for me. And as you know from listening earlier, the Nicole Brown Foundation was right there in my ritual path. Right there in the parking lot of the restaurant that burnt with all my equipment in it. So I went down there to that parking lot, and the foundation had moved. They weren't there anymore. And so I called them, and they told me where they were, which happened to be right across from my P.O. box, directly across the street from my P.O. box. So I went down there, checked my mail, and walked across the street and told them what happened. Well, actually, the way it went down was I called them, I told the secretary what happened, and she told me to come down to the foundation, and she told me where it was. And that's when I walked in there and met Lou Brown. And I told Lou Brown what went down, and it made him frown. And he asked me if, you know, would my sister want to testify. I go, I don't think so. You could ask her. Anyhow, she didn't want to testify. She didn't want to get involved. And they subpoenaed her. So they forced her to tell her story to a judge and sit there in front of O.J. Simpson and accuse him of pulling his balls out. Now, I'm sure that this affected everybody involved. I'm sure it affected Gerald, even though he didn't see the balls, but the girls that saw the balls, and I'm sure that traumatized them. But when I say that OJ's balls changed my life, it put me on a new path. I'm sure they've gotten over seeing OJ's balls. They don't have ball nightmares or nothing. You know, they're not scared to go out to restaurants and sit on the front porch because somebody's going to pull their balls out. So if you know my sister, I'm sure it's not the first time somebody's pulled her balls out and showed them to her. So I went in there and I told Lou what happened. Julie testified. She testified in front of O.J. Simpson. And after that, because of that, she sold her story to the tabloids for $15,000 or $20,000. So she made $20,000 just from being exposed to OJ's nuts. But on my end of things, I got involved with the foundation. I became a volunteer. I went in there and changed all of their websites and business cards from black and white to color. I did their events. I did you know, programs for their events. I even helped Denise put her book together. I did all the graphics in Denise's books. I've done all kinds of things with that Brown family. And it's because of the fact OJ pulled his balls out and showed them to my sister. I've started organizations because of my experience with the Nicole Brown Foundation, the Flock of Angels, Contagious Peace, where my nephew took his life. I started an organization for him because of the fact that I learned how to deal with people that are going through, you know, pain and hurt from violence and losing loved ones from working with Denise Brown. I played the music for her vigils. I played with Heart and Soul, wound up being Nicole's memorial song. It was played at all of her vigils. I'm just rambling on now about what that was, but that was a life-changing experience for me, and the ritual continued.